Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth here with you for another hour of Preds Talk here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, your official home of the Nashville Predators. And joining me this evening is the one and only Chase McCabe from Darren Donica Chase and the Predators Radio Network. Chase, how we doing?
How are we, Ryan? You know, I'm feeling good. Thanks for having me as always. Good to talk a little hockey and some playoff hockey, if that.
Well, it is nice that we are talking playoff hockey with the Nashville Predators, although I think we'd be in a better mood if last night's game had gone any different. The Nashville Predators fall 5-2 in Carolina for game one. And look, the Philip Forsberg, a nice goal to start. You wanted to see that out of number nine. That lead did not stay for very long, as Teravainen had a nice deflection goal to tie it up at one. Then the teams traded goals in the second period, where I thought Carolina started to impose their will a little bit throughout that period. And then you had the third period where the Canes scored three unanswered to close the game out with a 5-2 victory. And thought it was a concerning third period for this team, and not just when you look at that third period and those 20 minutes in a vacuum, but when you look at the series as a whole. That is where Carolina really flexed their muscles and really took over, and I think our biggest fear was what would happen to the Preds when that happens from Carolina's point of view. And Carolina looked like the far superior team in the final 20 minutes last night.
Yeah, I think this time of year is when you really can use like a car analogy when looking at teams, that, you know, what gear are they in? And I feel like, especially at the start of that third period, Carolina went up a gear. And I think the Predators tried, but they just didn't have it. And that's going to be the concern for me of, you know, are you going in, does Carolina have four gears? Do the Predators only have three? And how good can that third gear be for them? Can it be good enough to challenge? You know, it's one game. We'll find out. But you really saw a difference. You mentioned the second. I rewatched the game during the show, and there were some points where it's like the Predators didn't get a lot of chances, but when they did, Carolina was swarming them, and they just couldn't, you know, they couldn't punch it home. Luke Cunnan was in front of the net and had a really good look. Puck gets knocked away, but nobody's there to pick up the rebound and, you know, go back into the dirty areas and put it home. And whereas Carolina was able to do that on a couple of different occasions. So it's just, can you answer? You're not going to match them skill for skill. We already knew that.
And not many teams can do that.
No, not many teams. I mean, listen, this is the other thing that you have to remind yourself, you know, everybody, that, you know, the sky was falling, and I get all that. This team has a very, very good chance of winning the cup. I mean, Carolina coming in is one of the favorites to potentially do that. So you have to factor that in. And it's just getting to that next level. Is there a next level? Or is this it? And has the turnaround since mid-March been a great run, been a great story, but is it simply it? It's one game. It's hard to answer that question, but that's kind of my initial thought.
Yeah, and the biggest thing that it felt like they were going to really pride themselves on in this series was the physicality.
Sure.
And the fact that you look back to the Saturday night game on May 8th, 10 days ago, where the Preds won that game 3-1. It was really 2-1, and then they added the empty netter to seal the playoff berth that night at home. And the Preds played fantastic that night. And one of the things that I thought they did really well in that game that I thought would carry over was the physicality and the fact that they could maybe get under Carolina's skin. And that did not happen whatsoever last night. I mean, John Hines, and we'll get to the lineup here in a minute. John Hines put together a lineup where it was pointed that they wanted to set the tone physically with this Carolina team. They wanted to go out there and punch them in the mouth, and they threw a lot of jabs to try to punch Carolina in the mouth, and Carolina would not back down. I mean, Carolina ended the game with more hits than the Preds.
Yeah, Carolina answered.
Yeah, 56-49. Now, some of the real-time stats are a little skewed towards the home side sometimes, so you have to keep that in mind. But, for instance, Tanner Janot skating on the third line, a surprise there. Tanner Janot ended up on the ice a couple times when he was trying to throw a hit.
Yeah.
And he wasn't the only one. Where right. They were trying to throw their body around, and the big bodies for Carolina were basically fending them off. And they were throwing their fair share of hits as well. So that right there was the first uh-oh sign for me, that physicality just wasn't giving them a boost. And then to your point, when the Preds could not meet, or I should say could not match the skill level of Carolina, or just that sheer level of play, and Carolina had the momentum, the Preds could not do anything.
Right.
That was another concern for me, that when Carolina was playing their A game within those 60 minutes, Nashville did not have an answer. And that is something that if that continues to happen, and it's tough. Look, facing Carolina when they're on their A game, it is tough to turn the tides when they have it rolling. They had it rolling at times last night for long periods of time where the Preds just didn't have many good scoring chances.
Yeah, and I think another thing too, you know, we talk to David Poyle every Tuesday, and he was on with us earlier today on Darren Donick and Chase. So if you missed that, thegamenashville.com is the place to go. Because he said it, and then John Hines said it in his press conference. But David's exact words were, let me pull up the quote here. I think our best players got outplayed a little bit by their best players last night, and I would hope that we would even the playing field in the next game by our top guys stepping up. I think that Roman Josi would be the first person to sit here, look you in the eye, and say, I did not have my best last night.
Nope.
Ryan Ellis didn't either.
I thought Ellis was worse.
Yeah.
Josi made a couple plays in the first period, maybe even two periods, where Carolina easily could have scored or had a great scoring chance if not for Roman Josi.
Yeah.
Now, Josi and Ellis as a pair got punked last night.
They got bullied.
They got punked on a couple goals.
Which should surprise no one, and I don't mean that towards them. I mean that was the plan. Carolina had a plan of you got to shut down 59, shut down 4, and they did it, and they did it perfectly. Now, you know, I know the question was brought up by Adam Vingan to John Hines, you consider splitting them up and maybe putting Ekholm and Ellis together, you know, look at some different things. I think they are looking at all of that. But it's not just them. You know, Forsberg had the goal. You had Jofa back together. Arvidsson, it's his first game back in a while, but I'm sorry, you don't have time to, like, ease back in and get your legs back.
I mean, Nikita Kucherov did not play all season long, and he got 3 points
in
game one for the Lightning. Now, Nikita Kucherov is one of the top 10 players in the league, so you would expect that from him, more so than someone like a Victor Arvidsson, who has been trending downward here in the last couple of seasons. But your point is valid.
Yeah, I think, and I know we're going to talk more about the lineup, but I think that that's where you really got to look of if you have somebody, and there are some guys that aren't going to come out, and we know they're not going to come out, and I think we all know who those guys are. But if you have one of those that you're on the cusp about, whoever you put in has to look at last night and then look at their game overall, and they have to double that. I mean, they got to bring it to a completely different level if they're going to get in the lineup and stick in the lineup. Because you've heard the phrase chasing the game. I don't want to see John Hines chase the lineup through this whole series of trying to find the perfect one until it's too late.
Well, let's just get into the lineup, because John Hines, he alluded to it last Friday with Robbie and Rexrode, that Ellie Tolvanen was on the bubble for the lineup. Mm-hmm. He made that very clear. And that came to a came as a surprise to a lot of people. Not necessarily me, because I thought him as in Tolvanen being with Pitlick in that final game was a sign that Tolvanen may be moving himself down the depth chart with how ineffective he's been ever since he returned from injury. But it's almost like John Hines skewed so far to the extreme of trying to be physical, because he put Tanner Janot and Matthew Olivier in the lineup at the same time.
Right, which surprised me a little bit.
I don't know how you can win playoff games if you have Tanner Jeannot and Matthew Olivier both in your top 12. At the same time, when you have Elie Tolvanen, even Brad Richardson and Nick Cousins to an extent, not in the lineup in favor of Jeannot and Olivier. Like, I think the herd line needs to stay together, whether that's Jeannot or Olivier alongside Sissons and Trennan.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're definitely going to see a shakeup there in the top nine, whether that's Tolvanen coming back in or Richardson coming back in or Cousins. I'd be surprised at this point if he's going to Grimaldi, because Grimaldi has been one of the odd men out all season long.
Yeah, he's still got 10 goals.
I thought those were head-scratching moves by John Hines.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest one, though, for me, was the fact that your third pair was Ben Harper and Eric Goodbranson. That is the one that I thought was the most egregious of the lineup decisions that did not go well for John Hines. That, to me, was the biggest one that stuck out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, where was Benning? I don't think Benning's
been... Or
Fabbro.
I mean, Fabro's been a little bit of a liability this year.
Sure.
Benning has been fine. Goodbranson and Harper last night looked like they were skating in quicksand.
Yeah.
And we've heard callers or texters today bring up jokes of they were traffic cones out
there.
Tree
stumps.
Tree stumps, yep. Statues.
Yep.
But you look at Carolina's game-winning goal, scored by Nino Niederreiter, where Harper and Goodbranson get caught in their own end, and they did not know how to get the puck out of the zone.
Mm-hmm.
And then Niederreiter is left all alone, which isn't totally on Harper and Goodbranson. There's no coverage there to help on Niederreiter. He's wide open, one-timer. Canes go up 3-2, and they don't look back from there. But, like, Harper and Goodbranson cost them that goal, because that puck doesn't go behind Saros if Harper is able to get that puck out when he tries to pinch at the blue line.
Right.
And I think there absolutely has to be a change there. If Benning or Fabbro can play the left, I put Benning and Fabbro in there on your third pair. I just don't know if one can play the left.
Yeah, and that's going to be the hard thing to figure out. I totally get why John Hines and his staff went the way they did with the idea behind the lineup. I get it, because you know you're not going to outskill Carolina. You got to bring the physical game. So I totally understand what that thought process was. But I do believe that there was some overthinking of maybe you tried to throw too much at it. And even though, because let's be honest, you don't have a ton of skill to work with in the first place. You know, you have Granlund that has had a heck of a year. You know, you have Forsberg, but you took out, even though he's been inconsistent, Tolvanen has been your power play guy, and the power play was non-existent last night.
Well, okay. I don't know how much Elie Tolvanen actually helps the power play last night, because they never had the puck.
Well, then that's a good point.
I mean, they spent half the time at least on those power plays just trying to get possession.
Right.
Because Carolina was smothering them.
Which was 5-on-5 too.
But. Exactly. But even on the power play, when it shouldn't be that way, and then Carolina's on the power play and they set up within 5 seconds.
Right.
And you're just holding onto your butt hoping that UC Saros can bail them out, and Carolina did not score on the power play. But back to Tolvanen, I don't know how much of a difference he makes last night. But it's not like every single power play that you get in this series is going to reflect what you saw last night, which was barely any possession time. You're going to get possession time. And when that happens, you probably want Tolvanen out there.
Right. Like, I feel pretty confident in saying that Tolvanen's going to be in the lineup come tomorrow. Based on the conversation we had with David Poile, because he kept bringing him up and saying, you know, he could be an option for us, especially with his power play. And you kind of get the sense that Hines is thinking about making some changes. I feel like 28's back in tomorrow. Now, who does he go in for? If it's me, I probably take Olivier out, put Tolvanen in, and then I put Benning in for Goodbranson, and stick with Harper, but put Benning in on the third pairing. I understand the Fabbro talk too, but as you brought up earlier, you know, can either play the left shot.
So here was another head scratching part of the lineup decision by John Hines last night. Not only was it too far to the extreme of trying to be physical with putting both Jeannot and Olivier in there when you have, again, Tolvanen, Richardson, Cousins, and even Grimaldi on the bench. First of all, Jofa had not been together in a long time.
Yeah.
And you had not seen Jeannot play in the NHL above the fourth line.
Right.
And you throw Jeannot on there on the third line, which I thought he was okay.
Yeah, I mean,
he threw his body around. Sometimes he was the one ending up on the ice. Sometimes he was the one delivering a big hit.
I mean, that line did score.
But, like, we haven't seen that lineup with those two lines down the stretch when they are winning games. And how often do we see coaches in hockey go with the lineup that works? Like, the lineup that had been working in the last couple of weeks was Forsberg, Johansson, and Tolvanen on your top line.
Mm-hmm.
And then Duchesne, Halla, and Richardson on your third line. I'll be the first to admit that that is not the best case for Matt Duchesne in terms of getting the most out of him, but it worked.
Right.
That lineup was working. And he toyed with it to put Arvidsson back in and get more physicality in there. And I just didn't think they packed much of a punch at 5-on-5 last night.
So would you take Arvidsson out? Or would you put him on the third line, put Tolvanen back in, put him on the top line with Johansson and Forsberg, and put Arvidsson with Halla and Duchesne?
I would mix up all three of the top lines because I didn't think Granlund's line was very good
either. No, they weren't.
They got pushed around a lot. Luke Cunnan was really the only one delivering any sort of
And I disagree
punch.
With your caller from this morning that said take Yarncroke out. I wouldn't do that, but
no. I mean, Yarncroke is someone that you can play in any situation, really.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of John Hines' most trusted forwards. Yarncroke is not coming out of the lineup. But would I consider breaking up the Granlund line? Yes. And if you don't after this game and they still don't have a good game in game two, then I absolutely think they're going to get split up going into game 3.
Yeah. And you're probably right. I mean, the thing is, number one, you're past experimenting and you got to go back to finding what's going to work the best for you.
Sure.
But, you know, we have seen that second line maybe cool off a little bit, even though Cunnan has still played well. And as you mentioned, he was the one of the three last night that really did his thing. So I agree, and it's getting the most out of 95.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because Matt Duchesne, 10:38 of ice time last night,
mm-hmm.
second least on the team. It feels like everybody kind of brings up excuses for Matt Duchesne, and at some point, you're the $8 million center that we made a big deal about in this city to come to Nashville.
Right.
And by no means has he lived up to that contract. And he made a nice assist on the Halla goal. But if, I mean, we saw this in Columbus at the end of the regular season. What was it? The game that they lost
mm-hmm.
where he got benched in the third period?
Yeah.
I mean, it's clear that John Hines does not fully trust Matt Duchesne, especially because he's been stuck on the third line on the wing and off position for him ever since he came back from injury. So you have a decision to make there, too. Do you put Duchesne up and try to get the absolute most out of him like you did in the regular season finale and put him with Forsberg and Johansson? I mean, I think that has to be on the table as well.
At some point, and I know that nobody wants to hear this, but at some point you have to take the contract sheet and you have to put that in the desk. And you can't worry about how much a guy makes. You got to put the best lineup together that is going to help you win a playoff game. And right now, the way Matt Duchesne has played and spot on, everybody making excuses for him, and I think everybody that has talked about him or been around him has probably been guilty of that at some point in time. Oh, it's going to come together. Oh, he's got the good looks. Oh, it's bad puck luck. Eventually, it's bleep or get off the pot when it comes to Matt Duchesne. And I think that John Hines is at that point, and I feel like that the fans have been at that point.
The fans have absolutely been at that point.
And so if they come out tomorrow and they say, here's the lineup, and he's on the bench, I'm going to sit there and I'm gonna go, okay, there you go. He did it. And it might be the right move. You're right. He had an assist last night, and it was a nice assist. Do that consistently, not just every now and then. And to me, Matt Duchene is an every now and then player, and he can't be. He just simply cannot be. I don't care how much he makes, but he simply cannot be with what he was brought in to do.
I mean, 10-38 of ice time.
Yeah.
In a playoff game, making $8 million.
Right.
You just can't have that from Matt Duchene. So something has to be figured out there, and it might have to wait until the offseason for something to really be figured out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, with Granlund now as the second-line center, this feels like a similar situation as Kyle Turris last year or in
very
the last couple
so.
Of years, because you have a top six center just trying to find a spot in the bottom six just to stay in the lineup.
Yeah, and Granlund has played the role well, but he should be on the wing with Duchene or you know, one of these top centers. Like,
he should be, but Granlund has played his best with John Hines ever since he moved him to center this year.
Yeah, you're right.
So I don't know
and
if
he played
you
that early
can
in his
take
career.
Him off sure. of center. So I don't know if you put Duchene at second-line center and then Halla on the wing, but Halla's been great at center too. So some interesting lineup decisions for the Nashville Predators to be certain coming up going into game two. But coming up next, what are our biggest concerns? What are the biggest signs of hope? Are there any going into game two and the rest of the series? And also, did game one change our minds for how this series is going to go? We'll get to all that coming up next. He's Chase McCabe. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth and Chase McCabe here with you on this Hi. Tuesday evening. Slapshot Radio coming up at 7 o'clock, Penalty Box Radio at 8, as the reaction to Game 1 continues here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And looking at last night's game and how it impacts the rest of this series, let's start with perhaps our biggest concerns following last night's 5-2 loss for the Preds against the top-seeded and division-winning Carolina Hurricanes, who looked every bit the part last night, especially in the last 40 minutes. So for you, Chase, what is the biggest concern for you as you look at the rest of this series?
It's pretty simple to me. You can't get to the net. You can't get quality chances on them. It doesn't matter what goaltender is in for them. It's you got to get to him first. And, you know, yes, they got it past him twice, but those chances were few and far between for them last night. And then especially in the third, I felt like I was watching the puck down in one zone pretty much the whole period, because I was. And so it doesn't matter if it's 4-on-4 or 4-on-4, 5-on-4, 5-on-5, whatever, because there were a couple of different 4-on-4 chances last night. They weren't able to get to the net, to Carolina's net, and that's simply got to change, because if that doesn't and they can't generate quality chances. And I know sometimes you just got to see puck, throw the puck on the net, and see what happens. I get that. But if you can't get a quality chance, this series ain't going to last very long, bottom line.
No. And you can't rely on Philip Forsberg to capitalize on all the chances that he gets in close.
Yeah.
I mean, the play that Philip Forsberg makes last night in the first period to score that goal, I don't know how many other Preds forwards in club history make that exact play. I mean, that was a pretty goal. And it was a nice play by Ryan Johansson to get that puck and find Forsberg in the slot, and Forsberg makes a play. Then Jordan Staal goes out and makes a play in the second period. I mean, the first two goals for each team, you essentially traded a little bit of a fluky playoff-style goal with plays made just out of thin air from Forsberg and Staal.
With Jordan Staal saying, "Here, hold my beer."
Yeah, he looked like Ryan Kessler.
He was lights out.
He
last
was
night.
Everywhere. I mean, Jordan Staal last night looked like Ryan Kessler from the Vancouver series in 2011.
Yeah,
Preds fans don't want to hear that, but it felt like a carbon copy, especially with Staal going through Ekholm and Josi to get to the net on that goal.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, he was incredible. Here's the other thing. When I say getting the puck on the net, I mean, it's you brought possession up in the first segment. I mean, they couldn't hang on to it. Like, the puck would get on their stick, and then all of a sudden, here comes like four Carolina players coming after them.
And it felt like they were on the penalty kill a lot of the night.
The whole game, basically, yeah. And so how can you, you know, when you try and throw the physical game at them and they throw it right back at you and they're smothering you like they did, you know, how do you combat that? I'm asking that question because I truly don't know the answer.
You have to, first of all, you have to establish your own forecheck.
Mm-hmm.
The Canes thrive off the forecheck. They have ever since Rod Brind'Amour took over as head coach. And that's how they're able to tilt the ice in their favor so many nights. But you saw the forecheck that the Predators had and the fact that they were able to force a turnover result in that Forsberg goal.
Right.
I mean, Arvidsson is able to keep it in at the blue line, and then Johansson wins a battle in the corner, and he finds Forsberg, and Forsberg makes a play. Like, you're going to have to score a good amount of goals in this series like that for you to have a chance. And, you know, here's my biggest concern stemming from last night, and it's that your top defensive pair was overmatched again mm-hmm. in the playoffs.
Yep.
Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis. I don't know if John Hines goes into game two thinking about separating those two and maybe putting Carrier with Josi and Ellis with Ekholm.
I would.
Something that I would absolutely consider, considering that Carrier and Josi this year, when they've been put together, have been just fine.
And you've seen Ellis and Ekholm together for years, and you know it works.
Exactly. I would consider that. I don't know if John Hines is going to do that, but we'll see. But you look at, what was it, the fourth Carolina goal where Jordan Staal scores on the little turnaround shot. UC Saros couldn't see the puck, and it goes in. I mean, Ellis was just completely abused behind the net, where Jordan Staal wins the puck battle, and Ellis did not pack any sort of punch
mm-hmm.
on that shift. And this has become an alarming trend for Ryan Ellis when you date it back to even the Winnipeg series. And this team, watching Carolina last night and just the sheer size that they have as a team, they remind me of the 2018 Winnipeg Jets team, where they're big,
mm-hmm.
they are deep with their depth chart, where they probably have 9 capable top 6 forwards. I mean, that's kind of how Winnipeg was 3 years ago. And they can also play any style of game. If it's a 2-1 game or a 5-4 game, Carolina can win games like that.
Yeah.
And to go back to Winnipeg, I mean, Ellis and Josi did not play well in that series. They certainly got just their doors blown off against Dallas in 2019, especially Ellis, the memorable check by Jamie Benn in Game 5 in the corner that resulted in a game-changing goal. And Ellis again looked overmatched last night physically. And Josi at times looked like a fish out of water. That, to me, was pretty alarming. Carolina has the decisive edge at forward in this series. You probably have the edge at goal.
Yep.
Even though their stats look comparable, I mean, it's because of the system.
Sure.
And let's not mistake Nedeljkovic for Patrick Waugh out there.
Right.
The defense is where you have to at least neutralize Carolina, because Carolina's defense is very good.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a lot of talent.
Dougie Hamilton,
Pesce, Jacob Slavin.
Yeah, but I think Dougie Hamilton should get more praise than he does around the league.
He probably should.
You know?
But you need your own defense to match what they can bring.
Sure.
And your top pair was just chewed up and spit out last night.
Mm-hmm. And I think they'd be the first to sit here and tell you that. Now, you brought up Saros. We haven't talked about him a whole lot. I thought at times, like, some of the saves that he made last night, I mean, the cape was on, and then sometimes the cape came off, and he wasn't bad by any means, but he wasn't Superman like we've seen. I think some of that was he didn't have a lot of help in front of him. That's where they have to – that's another thing that concerns me. Are they going to be able to help him? You know, the question's been asked, can he be like Pekka, win the big games, steal a playoff game for you? I think he can. But on nights where he's good, not Superman, he's got to have the help.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought last night he was good. He just didn't have
He wasn't Superman.
He wasn't Superman. And you're not going to get that every night. You can't, like, Pekka couldn't do that every night. That's just the best goalies in the world are going to have nights where, hey, I'm good tonight. I'm really good. I'm not Superman.
Right.
So you gotta help there. And
I think it was the third goal that Carolina scored that ended up with Niederreiter
yep.
wide open. Right before
that, the rebound,
he makes a big save where
kind of kicks it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Live, it looked like Gudbranson had blocked it. Mm-hmm. But on the replay, Saros gets his right pad on it. A great kick save. But at that point, the entire D zone coverage is all scrambled, and that leaves Niederreiter wide open.
Right.
And you just can't have that. On the flip side, we just went through some of our biggest concerns. Anything that you take away from game one last night that you think is a good thing moving forward in this series?
Yeah, I think it's Forsberg, because I do watch him, and even, you know, outside the goal, and I think that some of that old Philip Forsberg has come back, because we've seen him be streaky, and we know that that's possible, but he can be big game Phil. We saw it in the return to play last year with Jofa, and I think that was maybe one reason why John Hines went that route of putting those three together, because you've seen it before. But I think it's him, but it's also somebody like Eric Halla. You know, that I think Halla continues to play well, and you know, there was a huge concern with him early on in the season that you're getting something out of those guys that are lower in the lineup. So, you know, I don't think it's all doom and gloom, but it's easy to think that way after last night.
So I would point to Nedeljkovic as being pretty vulnerable in this series. And that is my, I guess you could call it, biggest sign of hope moving forward, maybe even starting in game two tomorrow night. Nedeljkovic, I don't think, is this stud goalie like his stats show.
No.
I think the system in front of him is phenomenal, and he definitely benefits from it, because, I mean, how many big saves did he have to make last night?
Yeah, you can't get to him.
You can't get to him.
But if you get to him...
And the Forsberg goal...
He got to him.
He didn't look great on that. He didn't look great on the Halla goal. Like, he looked shaky at times throughout the game when he did have a puck, you know, bouncing on him, or, you know, may have been caught out of position a little bit. I think there is an opportunity there. Now, if you get him for one game, that may be all for mm-hmm. Nedeljkovic. They may just turn to Mrazek and go with him. I think both are kind of the same, though. Like, if you can get to them, you can score on them. But it's a matter of, you know, penetrating the middle of the ice and finding a way to get in front of them, like Forsberg did on that goal.
Yeah.
That he scored.
Do you remember, I can't remember which Ducks matchup this was. I want to say probably 2011.
2011 with Ray Emery and Dan Ellis?
Yes, yes. And it was, that was kind of the same thing. And they ended up beating them both. But, you know, they ran Ellis. And then Ray Emery, they were able to take care of when they finally won that series. But it was kind of the same deal of, you just have to get, you know you're probably going to end up facing both,
mm-hmm.
but if you get that confidence built up where you get rid of one because you know you can get to him, then that'll help you get rid of the other one. That's kind of how I look at
it. Well, didn't they light up Dan Ellis in game one, and then
yes.
it was Ray Emery from there?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, I think you're right there. But yeah, because I know Ray Emery was a goalie in game six when they finally closed it out.
Correct. I think Ellis only started that first game because the Preds won that game decisively. And I think they turned to Emery really quick.
Because Pekka's backup here was Lindback, right?
Correct.
Yeah, at that point. So, yeah, that sounds right.
So did last night change the way you thought this series will go or would go?
No. I mean, I picked Carolina. So,
how many games?
We didn't do games. Okay. We just said. But in my head, six. You know, I think six is about right.
Do you still think six?
If the Predators correct some of the things that we're talking about and maybe make some lineup tweaks here and there and they can win tomorrow, I think they come back into Nashville with a little bit of swagger and game three could be a coin flip. So I would say if that happens, it's still six. If you see what you saw last night, it's over in five.
I think tomorrow night's game dictates the length of this series.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
If the Canes win tomorrow night, I think it's over in four or five. Probably five. I think the Preds would get one at home.
Yeah.
If the Preds win, I think the Preds have a shot at getting it to six or seven.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends on, I mean, it all depends on what the win looks like. Is it fluky? Is it like them punching them in the mouth and
right.
looking impressive? Who knows?
Because here's the thing. You win tomorrow, and then you take care of business at home. Like, you don't have to win in Raleigh again. You know, that's the thing that you got to keep 100%. In mind. You win, you take one, but then you take care of your business at home, feed off the crowd, all those things. You could lose game five, come back, close it out in game six.
Speaking of the crowd, there's no way there were only 12,000 people in that building.
It felt right? like a little bit more.
Didn't it?
Looked and felt, sounded.
The lower bowl looked like 90% full.
Yeah.
At least. I mean, they had tarps on a couple of the rows around the benches.
Sure.
But, like, there weren't blocks of seats that were vacated. I mean, that looked like it was more than 12K.
Yeah.
It did.
Yeah. Well, the atmosphere was cool.
It sounded like it, too.
David Poile mentioned that, you know, it certainly helped Carolina, but it was awesome to hear that, and he looks forward to seeing and hearing it at Bridgestone.
Sure. Coming up next, what would be our ideal game two lineup? How would we draw up the lineup card if we were John Hines? We'll get to that. And a little piece of news today that I found interesting in Preds world. That's coming up next. He's Chase McCabe. I'm Ryan Porth. This is ESPN. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth. Chase McCabe here with you on this Tuesday evening. Game 2 coverage tomorrow night starting at 6 p.m. Puck drop shortly after 7 o'clock. All the action heard on ESPN 102.5 The Game with Darren McFarland on the pregame show. Pete Weber, Hal Gill on the call for the game. The Preds will look to not up the series after dropping Game 1 5-2 last night in Raleigh. So, Chase, we spent a lot of time earlier in the show talking about the lineup decisions that John Hines made for Game 1. I think we would both agree that to some level there will be changes to the Game 2 lineup. So if I were to put you in the shoes of John Hines, one Chase McCabe, how would you draw up the lineup?
Do you want to do this? You want to go line by line? We each give our...
Let's go lineup by lineup.
Lineup by lineup, okay.
You go with your full lineup, I'll go with mine.
So for me, on the first line, I'm keeping Forsberg and Johansson. I will insert Ellie Tolvanen into that, put him back with those two. I think they have played well together at times throughout the year, so that would be my first line. I heard what you were saying earlier about the Granlund line. I'm going to give it one more chance, leave it as is. If I need to adjust in game, then I will. But I'll keep Yonkrook, Granlund, and Cunnan together. The third line, I'm going to put Arvidsson down there with Duchesne and Holla. Olivier is out. Because I'm putting Janot back on the Beast Herd line, as I like to call it.
Herd line.
Beast Herd.
Okay.
Herd. Radio is Beast. TV is Herd. I just combine them, Beast Herd.
Okay.
That's what we go with.
But Herd was first.
We won't get into
okay,
that.
All right.
So Olivier comes out from the forward group.
Okay.
I'll say this, though. On my lineup, Matt Duchesne is still in. But it is truly... I got to see more. Like, if he's a part of the power play unit, a power play unit, you know, make contributions. Otherwise, I'm considering other changes because it's really hard for me to leave Cousins out, Richardson, even Rocco. And it's just, this is put up or shut up time for them. For defense, I am going to experiment with Yossi and Carrier. I will put Ellis and Ekholm back together. And then, as I said earlier, I will go with Harper and Benning on the third pair.
Not bad.
Saros and Net.
Oh, okay. All right. You didn't really need to clarify that, but thank you.
No, I just, you know.
I appreciate that.
I mean, Pekka's coming off a shutout, so who knows?
All right. So I could see your entire lineup happening. And I probably think that's the way it's going to go. Because going back to something I said earlier, of you went with a lineup last night that you haven't experimented with all year.
Yeah.
In terms of the top line and the third line. I mean, the Jofa line has barely seen any time together this year. And then Jeannot, Duchesne, and Holla have not played together. So would not be surprised to see John Hines go back to what has worked to an extent here in the last month or so. Here's what I would try, okay? And if this doesn't work, this might be a dangerous approach. This might be better to go.
I don't know about that.
To flip this and go with your lineup first, and if it doesn't work, you resort to this. All right.
Okay.
I'm putting Duchesne with Forsberg and Johansson, and this is your shot to prove it. Oof. You are going with Forsberg. You're going with Duchesne. And if those two can't get you going, I don't know what will.
Okay.
I don't think it was just a fluke that John Hines put those three together in the last game of the regular season. He was trying to find something there.
Yep.
And it was one game, but I felt like Hines was doing that to keep that in his back pocket in case he needed to shuffle up any lines.
Okay.
He may not be there yet. That might not be a game two change. That might be more like game four or game five. But I'm trying it. Okay?
Okay.
Second line, Callie Yarncroke, Mikael Granlund, and Victor Arvidsson.
I don't hate that.
Third line, Tolvanen, Holla, and Cunnan.
Okay.
And then your fourth line is Jeannot, Sissons, and Trenin.
So you've taken Olivier out.
And put Tolvanen in and then shuffle the deck.
Yeah. Okay.
So, Forsberg, Johansson, Duchesne, Yarncroke, Granlund, Arvidsson, Tolvanen, Holla, Cunnan, and Jeannot, Sissons, Trenin.
So
I don't think he's going to do something crazy like that.
I don't think he's going to do it.
Because you heard it like in the postgame last night, he was like, it was 2-2 going into the third period. I don't think John Hines absolutely hated the way they played.
Mm-mm.
And I don't think you should absolutely hate the way they played. I mean, they were being outplayed by Carolina in the second period for sure. But it's not like before the last period that they were getting circle skated around them.
Yeah, it's not – he's not going to go swing the hammer at the whole thing.
After one game.
And to your point on putting Duchesne on that top line, I mean – that to me is, he did it in the last game because it was the last game. I would have done it earlier. If that truly was going to be a trying to kickstart him, I would have tried that sooner because now's not the time. And that's like I said earlier.
Why wouldn't now be the time?
Because
you have to get something out of him. He is one of your most talented forwards that has been underachieving ever since he came into Nashville. And you signed him to be a playoff performer. That's what he was with Columbus before he signed here.
Right, but how many more times are you going to try and kickstart this guy? I mean, at some point,
sure.
Like I said, you have to put the contract paper in the drawer and go, he is what he is.
I hear what you're saying, but you're giving him as good of an opportunity as he's ever gotten if you put him with Forsberg and Johansson. I thought those two were good last night. I know fans. Yeah. I know fans. If Ryan Johansson has one shift that they don't like, they just pounce all over Ryan Johansson.
I know, and he's not scoring 30 goals. And
I thought he was fine. I thought Forsberg was good.
Mm-hmm.
You put Duchesne with those two, and if he still doesn't do it, then that's on him.
Yeah,
and it's been on him this entire time, but that at that point goes to what you said earlier, and that's put up or shut up.
Yeah, I mean, it's been 2 years.
You get an opportunity with 9-92. What else could you ask for?
I mean, I hear what you're saying. He's not going to do it, but I hear what you're saying. Defense, what you got?
Benning in for Gudbranson, and the exact six that you have.
Okay.
I don't know how much longer I can roll Yossi and Ellis out there in the playoffs against a team that looks pretty scary up front.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I mean, if they're going to get keyed in on like they have been, and they're going to get exposed, maybe the wrong word, but I mean, that's what they were last night. I mean, they were completely shut down and you saw their weaknesses. Then, yeah, you got to split them up. And Carrier has earned the chance to play the big boy hockey, you know, and play up there with Yossi, and he's done it at times. So I would give that a shot.
So, interesting tidbit before we get out of here.
Yep.
Philip Tomasino called up today from Chicago in the AHL. I don't think he's cracking the game two lineup, but there is a part of me that thinks, is he being called up to get some reps on the taxi squad in case this thing becomes dire in the next handful of days?
I think I look at that as John Hines went down to Allstate and bought him a little insurance policy. And that's kind of what I think that is. You're asking a lot of a rookie if you throw him into his first NHL game, you know, into a situation like that. But it's certainly something to pay attention to.
I mean, he brings more offensive threat than some of the guys that you have on on your list of scratch players.
And he'd be hungry and be amped up.
Not saying I'm putting him in there. Like I haven't given it much thought until the news came out today. But that was a moment.
Yep, I did the same thing. I was like, interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Chase McCabe, you can catch him 10-2 every weekday on Darren Donick and Chase. Chaser, thanks as always, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
For Chase McCabe, I'm Ryan Porth. Thanks for listening to Preds Insiders here this evening. Coming up next, it is Slapshot Radio at 7, followed by Pounding Box Radio at 8. Keep it locked right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.